Stark Naked Report. Stark Naked. Stark Naked. Stark Naked. Welcome to the Stark Naked Report. Today is Tuesday, January 13th. I'm Clinton Stark, and I'm joined by Lonnie Cowstark of Stark's Little Creek. Today we'll be talking about our Napa trip, wineries, and our experiences with some of the wines we tasted. Mamma Mia, oh boy, we saw the movie. Every guy has to go through it. He said, she said, we'll give it a review. Then, sushi and a 1997 Bollinger. We had our anniversary last weekend, and we'll share some of the experiences of opening up a 1997 Bollinger and pairing it with sushi. And finally, Lonnie has an update on a Stark Silver Creek contest. Thanks for joining us. Let's start the show with Napa in Wine Country. We had our first trip there of 2009. We were looking forward to visiting some of our favorite, well, one of our favorite wineries and some new wineries that we haven't yet visited and tasting their latest releases.
Yeah, it was actually interesting because I think we thought it was going to be quite quiet there in Napa, and it turned out to be really busy up there. I thought we'd be practically the only ones that decided right after New Year's to go to Napa.
Right, it was busier than I thought too. Although when we first got there, we were usually the first ones there, fortunately, and then the crowds came.
Yeah.
But it worked out pretty well. It's always nice to have a bit of a crowd, I think, because it gives it a nice atmosphere when you're in Napa to have people to talk to. You meet people from out of town.
It's nice. Sometimes I like going into a tasting room and just being alone, and it's quiet, and you're able to do the tasting and really think about the wines. Other times it's great to meet new people and learn about some of the wineries that they enjoy.
Right, and this time we really did get an opportunity to taste a lot of good wines, and obviously we're going to write a lot about those in our blog in the upcoming weeks. But do you want to go through and talk about some of the wineries? We started with Artesa.
Yeah, we had a wine club shipment that we need to pick up.
Right.
And we went into, they actually, for wine club members, have an exclusive tasting room. And it was incredible. There was a booklet with 25 different types of wines that they make, and then you can taste any of them as a wine club member.
Right. I think it's the most exhaustive wine list that we saw on our trip, and probably one of the most exhaustive wine lists in all of Napa.
Yeah.
And plus, when you're at Artesa, of course, you get the great views. And so, and they treated us very well when we were there, because we were in the members area. We got a nice amount of time with a couple of the folks there. We tasted every single, almost every wine. I mean, there's some we didn't. But
yeah, and we'll be giving, you'll be at least doing Stark Sip reviews of some of them.
And some wine reviews and some wine reviews. Yeah, we did pretty in-depth, and we took a lot of tasting notes. So we'll share our thoughts on their Pinots, which they're known for because they're in the Carneros region. They also have a new grape called Albarinos, which is big in Spain. I wrote about that, and we tasted that as well. So we'll have our comments on that on Stark Silver Creek. So lots of interesting experience at Artesa. Next up, we moved down the road and we went to Turnbull.
Yeah, we actually stopped by, and you had written down a couple of wineries you were interested in, and I think you were picking areas with Napa cabs.
Yeah,
and Turnbull
Napa cabs
was one of them on your list. So that's where we went, and what was interesting is the contrast in architecture. You had Artesa, which is very unusual, pyramid-like, modern. And then Turnbull, which was actually founded by the famous architect Turnbull, and he was into sort of wooden structured buildings, and this very much was a barn-like type building.
It was, and it kind of sneaks up on you. It's not set back from the highway very far, and once you're walking into it, you're like, wow, we're in the middle of the winery. And so in that way, it's a little more comfortable, actually. It's more approachable, I'd say. And they have a nice vintage car out front. It's kind of neat. And they have two tasting areas. One's the common tasting area, and the other one's the, I guess, the
reserve.
The reserve room, which is where we went. Because usually when we go, we like to taste the reserve wines.
And or at least the wines that are just available at the winery.
Yes.
And what was interesting was that the classic tastings were $10,
right,
and the reserve tastings were $20, but they were also paired with sort of fruits, nuts, cheeses, and done as a food pairing as well. And CJ was there, and she was very knowledgeable. She introduced herself, actually, it was quite funny, as the wine educator.
Well, she runs, I think. Does she run some of their classes there?
Yeah,
right.
Well, she was
yeah,
a wine educator, and she
yeah,
really went into some of the flavors. And I learned actually quite a bit from her in terms of just the different types of pairings to do.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that room, that barn, is it has not only the barrels, which are beautiful to look at, but also it has art. It's an art gallery as well. So.
Yeah, they were doing a photography showing.
And they had some great wines too, I'll talk about those, you know, the ones we loved and the tasting notes as well. So we then left there and we went actually next door almost, I think, maybe just down the road to
Cake Bread,
which was very busy by the time we got there actually. And the one thing, now they're very well known for their Cabernets. They score very consistently very well in Wine Spectator, Wine Enthusiast. And
is it their Cabernets or their Chardonnays? I thought they were
both. I mean, they're also known for the reds, and Chardonnay because it's a classic Napa grape. But I'm always thinking reds.
Yeah.
So we went also and tasted the Reserve Flight or whatever what's it called.
We tasted the red only. They red actually only. Had you had to actually make appointments. They said, and there was a wait of I think 40 minutes to do the red and white pairings. So we actually did the red only flights, which were relatively good as well. And it was actually in a different room and was all sort of cedar, done in cedar with big windows. Well, you thought it was a fishbowl. I actually liked the area.
I just thought it was a fishbowl because there's a lot of window around us. But it was nice being in a quiet area.
Yeah. Maybe I'm used to being in a room with windows because that's how my Adobe office is too. There's a big window. So maybe I'm used to being in a fishbowl.
They serve wine there?
No, but you can bring your own, I guess.
Just coffee and Diet Coke.
But, so what was interesting was it was sort of strange. You had to actually start in one location, tell them what sort of tasting you wanted to do, and then they would give you these weird cards that you would have to bring to the cashier that was somewhere else,
mm-hmm.
and then pay for your tasting and then come back.
And then come back, yeah.
Which was sort of disconcerting because a lot of tasting places, it's so much nicer. You do the tasting and at the end you settle. And sometimes if you buy a bottle of wine or several bottles of wine, the tasting becomes complimentary. It was just strange going to Cake Bread and paying for it first and then doing it. It was like paying for a ride at an amusement park and then going on the ride. I didn't particularly like that order.
Yeah, it certainly felt a little more commercial.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. You should never make the money more evident than the wine. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. I like it in areas where they have the cash and sheer and all that stuff kind of hidden. At Cake Bread was kind of apparent. It was like you were at a retail store and people were all around milling around with products and they were all just processing you through that.
Nevertheless, though, we did taste some great wines, though.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Cake Bread had some excellent wines, so we'll talk about that as well. We were very fortunate on this trip. They had some really good wineries. And our last visit for our trip was Sequoia Grove, which is a boutique winery, and we actually got a tip earlier in our trip from this couple that raved about it. They were club members and we'd heard of it before, but we'd never had a chance to stop by. So finally our chance.
We actually bumped into the couple when we got there. And so it was quite fun doing the tasting with them.
They were very knowledgeable. It's always nice, you know, when you run into people who talk about wine, and that's part of the whole Napa experience is sharing stories.
I always like tasting wines because you're always next to happy people. It's hard to be upset when you're drinking.
I don't think you see many people who are upset or not in a very good mood, even with today's economy.
Yeah.
In fact, people are probably even more so there to get away from everything. So we went to Sequoia Grove, and here's another boutique winery. It's again, not very offset from the road. Understated, which I like. And I love the tasting room. This is the kind that I like because it was very much non-commercial. It was very much not overbuilt. And it was very much focused on wine, which is what it's all about.
Yeah, I like the Sequoia Grove. I would consider it almost like a log cabin feel inside. And its name actually reflects it because on the outside there's these huge sequoia trees that grow.
Beautiful.
But I have to say, for some reason, I really like the austere inside of the Turnbull Reserve tasting room for some strange reason, because normally I do like a lot of the wineries actually we've gone to before had Tuscan architecture, where these ones really have the sort of wooden structure.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, a lot of the wineries would have stone, and a lot of them would be French, so the ones we went to this time were a little bit different in that regard. And so we went in there and we had tasted some excellent wines, which we'll talk about, and we had an opportunity to go into the barrel room, which is always a great experience if you get
the chance. Yeah, underneath. And also, there was one, actually, the couple that gave us the tip told us that we had to try their Cabernet from their Healy, I think, vineyards.
Healy, that's right.
It's called Healy. And what was interesting, they're probably going to kill us for telling everyone here, but it's not on their list of tastings, nor is it on their website. So that's what we were told, and I actually verified this.
It's kind of like In-N-Out Burger.
Yeah.
The secret code.
I went to their website and checked, and in fact, it's not there either. And you really have to be in the know, and it's actually a tasting that can only be done by wine club members and available only for wine club members. So the couple was really nice to kind of share their club membership with us, because
right.
We
got
Sequoia,
the perks and benefits of being with them. And
Sequoia
they were so
Grove.
Nice.
And they were nice enough to let us taste some of the Healy wine, and we actually bought a bottle because really liked it. It would be comparable to the Black Label that we tasted as Turnbull.
That's right, the Black Label. The difference being the Sequoia Grove was pure, 100% cab. The Turnbull's a blend.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that, but what I thought was interesting was I like both, but I thought the Healy was a lot more complex. Mm-hmm. And a little less fruit forward than the Turnbull one. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was the first wine I've tasted where I found that it changed as you tasted it.
Which one? The
Healy? The characteristics, yeah. Oh, yeah. It was strange. It was the first time I ever experienced it.
And you had used the Wine Thief too, which is cool. And we actually had a glass each out of the barrel room.
Yeah, we actually had a couple of barrel tastings.
That's true. And we went downstairs, and it's a stone. It's cooler down there. And if you've never been on a barrel tasting down in a wine cave, it's a wonderful thing to do. And they'll do it from time to time. You have to get friendly, I think, with the host or know someone. And it's definitely a great experience.
Well, actually, I tasted, now that I think about it, thanks for reminding me, I did actually visit the barrel rooms in Tuscany when I was at the winery in Montepulciano. So.
And how's it compare? How does Napa compare to Tuscany then?
As Lorenzo Petroni corrected me on.
Does it feel that different than Napa, or is it similar when you're in Tuscany?
It's kind of like Napa, but better. I hate to say that because I love Napa. But it's got the Napa, a lot of the buildings are new, but they're created to look old, right?
Yeah, almost all of them are. I mean, it's like homes.
Yeah, whereas in Tuscany, this winery I went to, Contucci, the family had been there for 1,000 years. And this building was built when, you know, they had all the stones and everything else. And they didn't make it up. Like, this was how buildings were built back then. So there's a sense of history. That
Real it, history. I mean, not...
Authentic history. That you
30 to 40, 50-year Napa history.
Yeah, it's different, right?
Well,
it's,
I guess that's why they call it the old world.
Yeah.
And we're the new world. Oh, boy. Mamma Mia. I guess every man must face the music, literally, some point in his life. It comes full circle. You faced it probably in the 70s, and now you have to face the rejuvenation, and that would be ABBA, this time in the form of a musical called Mamma Mia, no less.
Oh, Clint, you bring this up, and you complain about it, but you also hum ABBA tunes. I've seen you. I've caught you.
I know.
And
I don't
enjoy
think
the
it's
movie.
By, because I'll give a confession later, but I don't think it's because I want to so much as just they get stuck in your head. These songs.
They're catchy.
These are the ones that you're like, why am I singing that? That's so annoying.
That's why they sold a lot of records and didn't you say they were as big or bigger than the Beatles or?
I'm not sure exactly. They must have been on the same stature as the Beatles. I mean, it was big in the 70s. It was disco. It was ABBA. They were worldwide. You saw the documentary the other day that we watched part of. And the other thing is, when I was a kid growing up, and we traveled around the United States in a van with my parents who were teachers, my mom used to listen to ABBA all the time. So I know pretty much every song already. I would never really admit that.
Well, you just did.
But I guess I just did. No, the movie.
Yeah, the movie.
The musical, the movie.
And I had heard a lot about this movie, but it was sort of, it's strange. Everyone would sort of explain it to me in different ways, and so I never really understood the plot until finally we watched the movie. And I think it was sort of interesting progression, because by the time we got to Mamma Mia, we had just finished watching Dark Knight and then The House Bunny. And I think
it's natural, good viewing order.
And I think what happened was Dark Knight was so dark, we needed something light and fluffy. And so we watched House Bunny, and you can see the review on Stark Silver Creek where I thought of it. And after watching House Bunny, you kind of feel cheated Because it wasn't that great of a movie,
well,
and you
yeah,
feel
I don't know
like,
what you expected from that movie going in anyways. But.
Well, I want something cheerful. So
sure.
That didn't really do it. So I think Mamma Mia was finally like, okay, we're going to cheer up after Dark Knight, and this was the movie to do it.
And the amazing thing about Mamma Mia, which I liked actually, is that there was a lot of the music, there was not a whole lot of fake storyline. I mean, there was this kind of plot.
Yes.
And it was pretty superficial, but that was fine because what did you expect from Mamma Mia? And they spent a lot, not very much time in between songs, which was good. So they really just got into the music, maybe a scene or two of dialogue, not much, and then into the next song. So that was good. It kept it moving quickly.
Yeah, I thought it was...
which is important.
I thought it was completely superficial. I think there were...
The plot?
Yeah. I thought there were certain elements, I mean, just the twist, because...
The beginning...
Well, in the beginning, all you knew was there was a summer event,
yeah.
Right? Where
the mother,
you know, has... Well, this is just the beginning.
Yeah.
Where the mother has these flings with these three men. And so the daughter doesn't know who's her father, right?
I
mean, that's in the beginning. And I think that the events... were on par with, I would say, a Shakespearean comedy.
What?
A Shakespearean
Are you serious?
Comedy, yes.
Yeah, I think, you know, you knew that there's a wedding day and that there's a certain sequence of events that was going to lead up to some kind of comedic timing and some kind of reveal scene during
yeah.
that wedding.
Why do you laugh at the whole comparison to a Shakespearean comedy?
Well,
a lot of them happen at weddings.
You're comparing Ave and Mamma Mia to Shakespeare now.
The plot of it was, and lots of writers for movies have a literary background.
Oh, no doubt.
So a lot of this...
I don't know about this one. It was more of a musical
Hold on, it's not... Clint, let me explain. And let's just keep it straight. When Shakespeare actually produced his plays, they were actually targeted at... normal people, regular people. So right now, you know, we think that how somehow Shakespeare sometimes is this highfalutin language.
Well,
but actually...
A lot of it is, though.
But for our time...
Back then,
it was popular culture to go and see these plays. And that's why you had, like, comedic characters in there to keep the people in the peanut galleries amused. But it had a lot of the same elements of a Shakespearean comedy. Weddings were very popular in Shakespeare's comedies. There was also elements, I thought, of the Midsummer Night's Dream, where the scene where they're all dancing, everyone's in masks, and just elements of not knowing who's who.
Yeah.
And then you had the whole mix-up of who was going to give away the bride. A lot of those things were, I think, techniques that Shakespeare used to introduce comedy into his plays.
I think it was all lighthearted and good nature. There's no doubt. It was a feel-good movie, for sure. Except for there's one part that doesn't make you feel too great, and that's when Pierce Brosnan is singing.
Yeah, you know, that was the only thing that didn't jive. I thought, who was the one that played the main character? I'm bad with actresses' names.
Meryl Streep.
Oh, yeah. So she, I thought, played well and surprisingly sang well. Pierce Brosnan, on the other hand, every time he sang, you kind of winced and you were just hoping he wouldn't become even worse than he was.
Oh, he really tried hard. You could see the veins in his temple and his forehead popping out as he tried to sing. And the thing that I couldn't get over, and I'm a James Bond fan, so I remember him as James Bond for about 4 movies over a period of maybe 10 years. So it's hard for me to watch him singing an ABBA song knowing this is a super secret agent, you know, trying to save the world.
Yeah.
Now Jane said in a comment on our website about that, saying, hey, that doesn't matter to me that he was. But for me, it was hard to detach from James Bond.
Yeah, I think there is a typecasting, but a lot of actors have been able to move from one role to another really well.
Yeah, but I think for him, this is the wrong...
But for him, I think it was the fact that he couldn't sing very well. I think, and
that
you
would
could
do it
see
when
that,
you're in a musical.
And you could see that he was really struggling. And I think that really was a part, because Meryl Streep, played a lot of different roles as well.
Right.
So I don't think it's that so much as he was just badly casted, because maybe they thought he was dashing, handsome, charming, but the guy can't sing. And when you're talking about a musical, you need someone who can sing.
Right. All right, so final verdict on the movie, you liked it, I think.
I liked it, and actually the strongest characters, I think, were the sidekicks, the two female
they were good.
Sidekicks.
Right, they were very
they
good.
They were really entertaining. Funny, entertaining.
Yeah, so good movie, feel good movie.
Well, we had a special night last weekend, and of course, anytime you open a 1997 Bollinger, or maybe any Bollinger for that matter, champagne, you're in for a nice evening. And even more so this time for us, Lonnie, because it was our anniversary and we were doing a special sushi dinner night.
Yeah, we actually went to Mitsuwa, which is the local Japanese market, and got some fish and brought it home, and I did a sushi dinner. And it was funny because Clint has this favorite story, like you have this favorite story, where you talk about how the only time I ever made you a sushi dinner was when we were dating. And then I did it once, and that was it. And
course,
I never ever made you sushi again.
You were rolling sushi rolls. It was a very impressive date at my apartment. I remember that very well. I thought, geez, this is going to be great. Every weekend is going
to
be like this.
I was just trying reel you in. You fell for the bait.
Well, I guess we all have our techniques, huh?
Yeah. But anyway, so to put an end to the story, I figured our anniversary, we'd have a sushi dinner and I'd make it. And what's nice about doing it your own instead of going to a restaurant is you have a lot more time to talk and interact when you're
doing it. Right, it makes it a special evening.
Yeah. So we had hamachi, yellowtail, tuna, and salmon.
Right.
And we did some sashimi, some maki rolls, as well as some hand rolls. And I'll actually show some of the techniques on the blog.
Some soup and noodles, too.
And some soup and noodles, right, as well. But I have to say, in the beginning, I was a little rusty. I'd forgotten some of the techniques.
Well, no wonder. It's been a long time.
It started to come back.
I wonder why that would be.
So what did you think of the Bollinger?
So, yeah, we put the Bollinger on ice, and we'll talk about it on our blog, too, but because it was been in our cellar for at least a few years. We knew we were going to open it for a special occasion.
Yeah.
We opened it.
We actually got from Carl and Susan for another anniversary.
Uncle Carl.
Yeah, yeah. Carl, who writes at the Buceria
He's doing a great job writing all kinds of guest blogs. Very, very interesting on Bucerías, which is on mainland Mexico.
Yeah, where he has a place built as well. But they gave it to us, but we just never found the occasion. And finally, we were inspired, especially since we knew we were doing a sushi dinner. And champagne...
Oh, it pairs really well with sushi.
Something that pairs well with
sushi. Oh, you know, and surprisingly so. Because normally I drink a beer, to be honest, with sushi. Because a beer does go very well with sushi, as do some white wines. Champagne, though, it was great. Now, this Bollinger, of course, has very fine bubbles. Has a beautiful nose. I mean, just it's so smooth when you say, and it had a little bit of citrus tone to it, but it was light.
Yes.
I mean, you can tell it was
a special bottle.
You could tell it was a special bottle. I mean, this is not one you pay $100 for and you wonder, well, that's not really worth it.
Yeah.
But this was. And when you had a hamachi, the sashimi, yeah, raw fish with the champagne, wow, what a wonderful
treat.
Explosion,
right?
In the mouth. It's so savory. I can't even find the words to describe it. It was good.
That's great. And it was a memorable occasion. And it's definitely something to think about for your anniversaries, to do a nice meal at home and open up a special bottle of champagne.
And drink it all. I mean, we left none. I mean, I knew we can open a Bollinger. We're not going
to
leave.
Do we really have to share that detail?
Well, I mean, we're not going to open a bottle of champagne. There will be none left when we're done.
It was funny because, Clint, you were saying that maybe we should save it for occasion we had more people. And I was like, nah, let's just drink this bottle ourselves and really celebrate. And we thought we couldn't do it, but we ended up,
and goodness knows, I mean, if we have that much challenge drinking this kind of bottle, I wonder what's going to take to drink some of the bottles you have stored in our cellar that are four or five times the price.
Yeah, well, it'll have to be a very, very special occasion.
Another 10 years. You have an update, I think, on contests, red doors, blue doors, green doors, this kind of thing on Stark Silver Creek.
Yeah.
Why do you want to talk about that?
Sure. We had a contest, actually, our first ever on Stark Silver Creek. It was for the Loretto Live blog. The premise behind it is that people could write in about things that were happening around Loretto to Loretto Live at StarkSilverCreek.com. And we were actually surprised with the caliber of the entries. We got some great entries, and so much so that we thought, hey, let's, you know, do a contest.
And I should say they were excellent. I read through them all, and they had good photos, some of them, and they're well thought through, and they're fun to read.
Yeah. And so, because sometimes it's kind of a little boring hearing just you and I talk on
Yeah,
a
that's for sure. Awesome.
But, so the contest, basically, we judged it, and Deborah Scallion and...
Scanlon, I believe.
Scanlon and Conrad...
Conrad,
What's his last name?
I'm not going to try pronouncing it. One. So, and I tried to play a little game with them, which is that I gave them two doors, a blue one and a red one. And the blue one was the, you know, the sure thing, which is the Loretto calendar. And the red door was a mystery, and they're not going to find out for a month. Both of them, and I'm not surprised, chose the red door.
There was no green door?
No green door. Okay. Just two. Okay. The red door, because it's you know, a mystery, and I think most SSC readers are adventurous. And so they may be getting a lump of coal, or they may be getting something slightly nicer. You know, we don't know, but it's a gamble. So anyway, so that's something that we'll update people on. For those of you that missed the contest, we're actually starting up a new one. It started off January 1st, unbeknownst to all of us.
Wow.
It just started up on its own. Essentially, there's going to be three categories. Simple. There's going to be a category for the best guest blog post, and you can email any entry to blog@starksilvercreek.com. For those of you that haven't blogged, just think of it like you're writing an email to a friend about something happening, and it's going to be just for anything Loretto or anything around wine or anything you want that you think would be appropriate for a blog.
Exactly. Okay?
And that's going to be the best one's going to win a prize. The other category is on comments, so you can participate by adding comments to the Stark Silver Creek blog. And every time you add a comment, that provides some new information. So you can't just say hi or thank you. but anything that provides some new information, you'll get a raffle ticket. We'll put it into a big garbage can. And then at the end, we'll draw from that. Finally, the third and last category is for our forums. And our forums are basically discussion boards. We just started those. So it's a new part of Stark Silver Creek. And it's really for being able to discuss topics that are of interest to this community, and to actually have it in categories so you can reference back. So there was a discussion around home insurance, for example, and you weren't interested at the time, maybe you wouldn't know about it. But then later, if you were interested, you can actually go into that particular category and be able to find the information there. So the
FM3 is a good one too.
Yeah, FM3 is popular, and so is restaurants. So definitely looking for participation there. And the contest is basically anytime you add a forum post, a discussion board post, you will also get a raffle for that particular category, and we will do a drawing, I think, at the end of March. But for official rules, wait for my blog post, which will come shortly.
Okay, and hopefully it's not too much fine print.
No. We don't have lawyers here at Stark Silver Creek yet. Right. So keeping it simple.
Good luck, everyone.
Well, I think that just about wraps up another episode of the Stark Naked Report. You've been listening to Clinton Stark and Lonnie Cal Stark from Stark Silver Creek. Thanks very much for joining us. We can't wait to talk to you again.